Good evening, friends and family, and all listeners. Thank you once again for tuning in to Bards Rise. I'm your host, Michael Dean. Today's show, I'm going to entitle How to Fight the System. For those of you who don't know, there's a handout on the show page on BBS radio website. So you're welcome to navigate to today's show, and you'll find it there so that you can download and follow along. Before I begin, I'd like to say thank you, thank you, thank you to all my subscribers. I truly, truly do appreciate it, especially the new ones. Welcome aboard. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, so housekeeping. I was talking to a listener recently, and they had a question about my comment that cream is not the only thing that floats. So on page two, I show you how it's a combination. That phrase is a combination of cream rises to the top, and SH, you fill it in, T floats. So cream is not the only thing that floats. Next, housekeeping. A few weeks ago, I made a comment on a post that this one individual made with respect to relationships. And you'll see that specific posting of hers and what referring to on slide number three. And I was pretty critical about her comments that men want respect. But recently I had a chance to listen to somebody else's view or explanation of respect. And that show and the individual that posted it, the Blue Collar Wife Life, all both on Instagram, is also on slide three to the right. And after listening to the way she said it, I have to retract my prior statement. I just wanted you to know I'm the first one to, own my stuff. And yeah, so the way she explains respect, I would agree with that. Guys do want that. And I would imagine women as well. But yes, so there's that. Also on housekeeping, I've talked about my past relationship with the ex, my relationship with the children, and me leaving the Catholic Church. And I came across a post on Instagram called the end of the account is Catholic Carolina or Carolina Mom. And in it, she talks about, how some people divorced moms, including women that are practicing Catholics, and I guess being subject to judgment by other practitioners within the church and them not knowing the full story. And basically, she's kind of saying, we're going through a lot sometimes. It isn't always so easy to, follow what the church dogma is and stay married. And that rang true with me to my core. And I'll just give you an example. So when I just, had recently discovered back 7 years ago now, 8 years ago, that my now ex was a closeted bisexual sex addict and actually had incestuous pedophilic relationships with a close family member of mine, I went and I sought help from the local parish, and I spoke to the Monsignor that was in charge of my church. And after sitting down and ex talking to him about what I had been going through, what I saw, and the subject of the conversations that my now ex and I were having at the time, after about 35, 40 minutes, he looked at me and he said, "You need to get a divorce lawyer." So here I was, a practicing Catholic, trying to do what I can to follow the church dogma and stay married. And the guy who's part of the group of guys that doesn't believe in divorce told me to go get divorced, go get a divorce lawyer. And he's not just one of the guys, he's like in charge of the guys that don't believe in divorce. So he makes sure that everybody toes the line. And there he is telling me to go get a divorce. So there are situations in which even the church would say yes, you get a divorce. And if you start looking into some of those exceptions, it's not as black and white as many people believe it to be, including practicing Catholics, that is. There are exceptions to abuse and other things that go on. So, I, like this woman, ask everyone that's out there to please not be so judgmental in general, but especially if you're in the church and one of the fellow parishioners are going through a really rough situation, because I assure you, you don't know all the facts. And to those of you who are in the church, I throw this out to you. The original priest pedophile, saga was revealed in 1985. It's now 40 years later. We've had 40 years of appointments of priests and their promotions and, pedophile protecting, etc., within the priesthood. How do you square that with papal infallibility? I mean, all of those priests, in one way or another, are appointed by the popes, right? So why is the pope picking the wrong ones? Why is the pope authorizing training that doesn't work, spiritual practices that apparently don't work? Maybe it's because the church doesn't have the juice that it pretends to have. I just throw that out for you to consider. And perhaps you, after considering it, want to walk away from the church, just like I have, and many, many others have as well. Next slide, number five. A couple shows ago, I also spoke about the Masons and how different levels of Masons take different oaths. And one of them was the Master Mason, which is the third level, right? Third degree. And part of their oath is, I will keep a worthy brother Master Mason's secrets inviolable when communicated to and received by me as such, murder and treason excepted. So at the third degree level, they're going to protect their secrets except for murder and treason. However, I recently came across another post from David Wilcock, and that's on page slide six. And in it, he talks about Freemasonry and specifically the Royal Arch, which is the seventh degree Mason or seventh degree, seventh level. And he talks about how Freemasonry at the seventh degree takes oaths to keep each other's secrets, to include murder and treason against one's own government. And then at the 30th and 31st level, next slide, they take oaths that they will kill the head of the snake of religion. And they're talking about all religion. And by killing all other religions, what they're doing is replacing those religions with their religion, their dogma. And that is Luciferian. Ultimately, the worship of Satan and some really, really dark, evil stuff. And if you don't believe in that, then you will be killed. That's according to David Wilcock's research, who is internationally known as a fairly reliable source, if not very reliable. So, another reason why we need to get to the root of who is a Freemasonry, if they are holding public positions of trust, such as judges and policemen and firemen and council members, state and federal, local legislators. We need to know who we're dealing with and if they took one of these secret oaths. Because if they did, then they essentially have given their loyalty to an enemy of the state, an enemy of the country. And they cannot be trusted in their position because they will play favoritism. We need to root that out. So, on slide eight, a couple shows ago, I also put out this one video about this one woman who had been arrested because she allowed her 10-year-old son to walk less than a mile to a Dollar General store when she had gone off to a doctor's appointment. And this woman, I believe, had two master's degrees. She was a former public school teacher. I mean, she's a responsible individual. She's has other children, older children. She's proven herself to be a fit mother. Yet here she is being arrested by the local, law enforcement group and actually put in handcuffs. Why? Because some private citizen had a conversation with this young man, asked him a series of questions, and at the end of that questioning, she went and filed a complaint. Why, in God's name, as they say, would any respectable law enforcement agency act on such a complaint? It's absolutely mind-boggling. And I submit to you the reason why they acted on that is because I'd bet dollars to gumballs that she had some type of secret affiliation in some one of those societies, clubs, or cabals that gave her special privileges that required the lieutenant or the captain or the sergeant, whoever was in charge at that time in the police department, to act on whatever it was that she said. Because she gave some secret hand sign, hand signal, or password, or whatever. Someone who's truly concerned about this young man, that family, and doing justice and bringing justice to that community, because that community has also been violated, needs to look into who filed that complaint and trace that back and see what that woman is affiliated with. Again, I'll bet you dollars to gumballs, she's part of the secret handshake club. Okay, on slide nine, I put out here a request to the universe. So I'm sure everybody that listens to this show has watched Out of Shadows, right? That documentary, as well as the documentary of Fall of the Cabal, and perhaps sequel to Fall of the Cabal. Absolutely professional videos, very informative. The technology and the graphics behind it, the research was unbelievable, award-winning for both of them. But I've used those as examples because what I would love to see, in addition to Fall of the Cabal winding up back on For the People's, website, for some reason it was dropped. I would love to see it back up there. But using those two videos as an example, slide 10, I would like to see someone put together a video of that quality that talks about the harmful rays that are emitted by the cell phones, the iPads, the laptops, all these electronic devices that we think nothing of. Not just the harmful rays that are emitted from these devices, but also the capturing of biological and genetic data of the holders and those within its vicinity. And if they can show like a brain on these devices and a brain off of these devices, that would be phenomenal. Because a lot of people have talked about the dangers of these devices. But it doesn't really hit home until somebody really consolidates all that information and presents it in a very, in a very easy to comprehend format with pictures. Moving pictures are even better. So that's my request to the universe. Please, please, please help somebody do this little project, if you will. And publish it so that people can truly appreciate the harmful effects and the damage that these devices do to people of all ages, shapes, sizes, colors, creeds, what have you. Slide 11. Slide 11, I entitled Pulling History into the Present. Here in New York, before Andrew Cuomo, we unfortunately had to tolerate his father. Screaming liberal, worse than Andrew, I believe, at least at the time, because the state was more conservative then, if you can believe that. But his father, Mario Cuomo, ran for New York City mayor. He didn't get elected. Then he ran for governor and he got elected. And he was elected two more times. So unfortunately, we had to deal with him for 12 years. Tax and spend liberal to the hilt. And Andrew was actually part of his election campaign. He served as a confidant in some title, whatever, government job as a counselor and confidant to his father slash governor. And his father was there when Andrew eventually ran for governor and was elected. So fast forward to those pictures on slide 12, when Andrew was caught, as many of us believe, by the White Hats in certain underground or secreted facilities where they were torturing, sexually molesting, and sacrificing children. And there's, according to my sources, open sources, there's Andrew walking around with no shirt and his nipples pierced with large barbell type piercings. So the White Hats told him, as part of your plea agreement, you're going to walk around and show everybody at this press conference your nipple piercings. You like to wear them when you're sacrificing children, so why don't you wear them to the news prep news conference? When COVID was screaming and raging. And so he did that. And that explains why he, for no apparent other apparent reason, was wearing these apparent piercings that could be seen through his shirt. Well, now, as many of us know, that Andrew Cuomo, despite resigning or deciding to not seek re-election in disgrace, has now decided that he's going to run for New York City mayor. And that got me thinking. Not just me, the Department of Justice as well. Apparently, on slide 14, if you type in Andrew Cuomo now, you'll see that many, many news outlets out there are talking about Andrew Cuomo and how he's under investigation by the Department of Justice for essentially corruption. No surprise there. Even though he's running for New York City mayor. So I couldn't help but, connect that to his father's run for New York City mayor, a failed run, the corruption, the whole thing, right? The apple didn't fall far from the tree. So if that's the case, and it is, we of course have to remember Bob Grant. Bob Grant was a staple here in talk radio here in New York and New Jersey as well, the tri-state area. And Bob Grant, that's not his original name. He was born Robert Ciro Gigante. He was a proud Italian American, very conservative, wicked smart, but a very easygoing guy. And he was on talk radio for 60, 70 years. And if you look him up, you'll see that there's a little snippet that I'm going to read real quick on Bob Grant. And it says, for the 1994 election, Grant did daily rants against New York Governor Mario Cuomo, who he was now calling, quote, the Sfacin. Grant has been friends with Cuomo beginning in the 70s, but they had a falling out during an appearance in 1986 on Grant's show. Grant questioned Cuomo on why he needed a large war chest against an opponent who didn't have much money, and Cuomo hung up on Grant. In 1994, the Mario salute became a staple of Grant's show. Listeners would call in and state, Mario, ascoltami, tu sei proprio un sfacin. Grant explained the translation in English was, Mario, listen to me, you're a real lowlife. T-shirts and bumper stickers were created with anti-Cuomo messages. A listener also made an anti-Mario Cuomo song, which Grant would frequently play. Grant campaigned for Cuomo's opponent, George Pataki, and had him on as guest many times, allegedly leading to Pataki picking up enough votes to defeat Cuomo. And I remember he was great. I would listen to him in person. He was a great host. And so, in memory of Bob Grant, and in keeping with the corruption in the Mario Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo line, on slide 16, I propose a new salute, an Andrew Cuomo salute that would go, Andrew Cuomo, ascoltami, tu sei proprio un sfacin. If anyone's interested in making t-shirts or bumper stickers with this slogan, I assure you I will be your first customer, and I will, have you on the show and praise your product profusely. So if you know anybody who's in the business, especially here in New York, float this idea by them. We'll see how it goes. Bards Rising, shout outs. First one goes to Tim Tebow. Yes, the former football player. I didn't know it, but I recently found out that he's actually very heavily involved with the child trafficking, trying to combat that. And he sat down and did a very lengthy interview with a very popular host. And Laura Ably retweeted or reposted some segments of that interview. And he's got the numbers, and unfortunately, fathers, dads, fellow dads out there, you are the major abusers of children, sexual abusers. You need to stand up. If you have that issue and you know about it, and I know you do, you need to get away from your children. You need to go get help if you can. You need to run away if you can't help yourself to a place that's really remote. But you are the ones that are responsible. You are the adults. You need to break contact with children and get the fuck away from them. The next shout out goes to beautiful young woman. She goes by Plant-Based Omnivore, and she talks about how the deep state and Rockefeller collaboration basically are the ones that drove women out of the homes and brainwashed them into thinking that they had to earn their own salary, when in fact they were just trying to get the children away from the family so they can indoctrinate the children and find somebody else that they can tax, right? Another income to tax. So all this women's lib and stuff, if you look at the roots of it, it's all bullshit. That was brought to us by the cabal. And the final shout out goes to the channel or account of Papa.Support. This young, beautiful gal talks about parental alienation and how women essentially are alienating men from their children. And I can't thank you enough for standing up and calling out that BS. Thank you, thank you, thank you to all three of you. You are truly bards in spirit. And then finally, I just want to remind everybody about the Secret Society and Jesse Zoboter, right? The former Queen Mother of Darkness, who ruled over four Mothers of Darkness. One of them escaped the system and wrote a book. It had to do with the Pale Horse or Pale Rider. I'm sure you can find it. But she talked about the five branches of the system, which is going to bring in the new world order, and you'll find them there on slide 18. And one of them, of course, is the Freemasons. I'm big on bashing the Freemasons because they're the most popular and the biggest. Certainly not the worst. They're all equally bad in my eyes, but I think we can draw attention to the bigger group by focusing on them. And she has personal experiences, and she'll tell you how bad Freemasonry is. So again, this is personal experience that she shares with us. And I don't know David Wilcox's personal experience with those secret societies, but it appears that it's not personal experience, it's research, which some people may find not as credible as personal experience. So that's why I again put Jesse Zoboter out there. And also the fact that I know when I was in jail, those Satanists really didn't like me talking about Jesse's a boater and the Queen Mother of Darkness. So, what do you think I'm going to do? I'm going to talk about it as often as I can. So, with that background of the system, and it's a real thing, I call your attention on how to fight the system. We start off with the Fifth Amendment. And the crucial parts here on slide 9 are highlighted in yellow. And it says, no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So once we establish that, the question comes, well, what process is due? How much process do we have to get them, give them? Well, it depends on what the issue is. If you're looking to convict somebody for first degree murder and put them in jail for 20, 30 years, life, or maybe even the death penalty, that's the highest. They get the most process. But if it's something like, I don't know, shoplifting, disorderly conduct, a speeding ticket, we don't give them as much process. So it's easier to convict them. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but that's just the system that we have. Also, 14th Amendment says something similar. And let me just back up here. The Fifth Amendment, part of the that amendment was designed, the first 10 amendments were designed to restrict the federal government, right? But then after the Civil War, we had the Antebellum amendments. And after the Civil War, we said, look, we had the first 10 amendments and it only protected the federal government, but the state governments showed themselves to be pretty bad as well. So we need to fix that and we need to put measures in there to also restrict the states and what they can or can't do. And that's how we got the 14th Amendment, one of them anyway, right? So the 14th Amendment, Section 1, states that, all persons born or naturalized, and it goes on and on. And, quote, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So it tracks what the Fifth Amendment says, right? And again, due process is a sliding scale. Now, we also have to consider that due process, there are essentially two types. Courts have looked into it. One is procedural due process. And the other one is called substantive due process. And it's considered a very iffy theory. I believe Justice Thomas has come out and said there's no such thing as a substantive due process clause. Substantive due process clause says that even though it's not written, there are just some things that you just can't do, even though it's not identified in a statute, in a rule, in a code, or even in the Constitution. You just can't do it. Well, how do you determine what that is if it's not identified, especially for the court when they're supposed to be guided by written material, right? As Justice Scalia said, well, how do you know which rights to protect? Did an angel whisper it into your ear? So I can appreciate that. But I think it's fair to say, and along those lines, in this country, there used to be a practice that was called notching. When someone was convicted of a felony, they would notch his or her ear. In other words, they would cut like a wedge in the ear. So no matter where he went, everyone noticed, hey, that guy's a felon or gal, and you can't trust him, and he can't vote, and whatever other ramifications came with it. The problem is, what happens if it gets overturned and they found that he was railroaded, right? How do you put the notch back? You can't. So the Supreme Court has come down. I mean, it had great practical effects, right? And purposes and uses. But the Supreme Court has, pretty made it pretty clear there are some instances that you just can't do, right? Like we can't keel haul somebody. That would violate the cruel and unusual punishment. And again, even though it's not specifically identified, I think it's pretty fair to say that we would agree with that. And now, and this is a setup, I'm going to discuss the substantive due process clause in a little bit, a little more detail. So, sticking with the 14th Amendment, we're going to drop down to Section 3 of that amendment. And it says, no person shall hold any office, civil or military, under any state, who, having previously taken an oath as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. So, in layman's terms, if you engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the state, a state, or the country, the federal government, then you can't hold either federal or state office in either or any of the three different branches of government. You can't be a cop, a fireman, a judge, a member of the Senate or legislature, a mayor, county executive, whatever it is. You can't do that. District attorney, likewise, if you've given aid and comfort to the enemies of the federal or state governments, you also are disqualified under this section of the 14th Amendment. So I submit to you, and I've already said, that Freemasonry has interests that are hostile to both the federal government as well as the state governments, right? They're working to undermine those authorities, actively working to undermine those authorities. How? By not adhering to their oaths to mete out justice, to provide due process, whether it's procedural due process or substantive due process. They railroad people. They steal their assets, their children, everything they have, their property, their vehicles, their pets, you name it, family heirlooms. That's what they're all about. Taking it from those who aren't part of the secret handshake club and giving it to those who are. And we, the non-members, haven't known what's been going on for decades, right? But now we're starting to wake up. Now it makes sense when you have a certain demographic that's that has much higher levels of conviction compared to others, or a significantly higher percentage of their children are taken from them and placed with foster children and then go missing or adopted out or sent across state lines or kidnapped. That's what's driving all of that. The secret handshake club is what's driving all of that. And the secret handshake club and what they do, like, as I said before, those interests are hostile to the state and federal constitutions and the citizens thereof. So by dint of being a member of one of those secret handshake clubs, you have given aid or comfort to the enemies of the federal and state governments, and you would not be eligible to hold office according to Section 3 of the 14th Amendment of the US Constitution. So that's the lay of the land, right? Let's delve in a little bit deeper. There's a reported case. And I have it on slide 21. It's called Brokaw v. Weaver. The citation is 305 F3rd 660 at 665, Seventh Circuit, 2002. I'm going to just read the highlighted part. Nessus, one of the people that brought the lawsuit, claimed that his opponent's lawyers used their political clout to turn the state judges against him. Sounds like the secret handshake club, right? I show comics, right? A comic about stuff like that going on. Just go back and pull the old handouts. You'll see it. The Rooker-Feldman Doctrine did not bar Nessus's claim. because his suit was not premised on a claim that the state court judgment denied him some constitutional right. Rather, his federal claim was based on a right independent of the state court proceeding, due process. As we explained in Nessus's, any other conclusion would mean that there would, quote, be no federal remedy for a violation of federal rights whenever the violator so far succeeded in corrupting the state judicial process as to obtain a favorable judgment, close quote. Moreover, we reason that such a, quote, result would be inconsistent with cases in which, for example, police officers are sued under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983, the Civil Rights Statute, for having fabricated evidence that resulted in the plaintiffs being convicted in a state court. In other words, if you use your political clout, your secret handshake club connections, it's basically the same as police officers fabricating evidence to have somebody railroaded into jail. So it's not just me saying this. Here you have the Seventh Circuit of the US court system saying this, right? But they talk about it in the context of substantive due process. Next, we have, oh, hold on a second, folks. So why is this an issue? And how would it, come into play, right? Because right now I've been focused on federal law. Well, some of my listeners are not here in the States, and they're probably saying, well, Mike, what you're saying is all well and good if you're in the federal government, but I'm over here in Europe or Asia, Africa. We don't have a US Constitution. Fair enough. However, I would submit to you that every system of government in the world has some form of reasonableness to it, right? Certain do's or don'ts, certain third rails. And that will be illustrated by slide 22. Here I have basically a demographics, a matrix of relationships, of consanguinity. How would your country feel if the judge was ruling over a case that involved his own son or daughter that's being prosecuted for an alleged crime? Do you think that country, the legal system in that country would say, no, you can't be the judge in this case, right? We'll get somebody else to do it because it just doesn't look right, especially if the guy winds up going free or gal. Because people are going to think that the guy or gal got off because of family favoritism. And then that hurts the whole judicial system, right? The whole legal system. It has to have a certain appearance of neutrality, of fairness for both sides. It wouldn't be fair to the prosecutor who's trying to put this guy or gal in jail if the judge was that person's father or mother, right? Well, that's one of the basic tenets of due process. Is the judge neutral? Is the judge fair? Does the judge have a certain bias either for or against one of the parties in the system? And if they do, or if they even have the appearance of one, then that judge needs to be disqualified. If that police officer has the same issue, right, that they have something axe to grind against the person that they allegedly, arrested or accused of doing something, that needs to at least come out and be presented to the jury, right? You could have turned your head. You let nine other people go on these same set of facts, but you didn't let me go. It's not because it's a real crime. It's because you have an axe to grind. And the same goes for any court-appointed individual, the prosecutor, everybody, even the jurors need to be asked these questions. Because how do we know that one of the attorneys or the judge or somebody else isn't giving them a hand signal to find either for or against one of the parties? We don't know. And we already identified that that's how these people operate, and that they look to take away children and property from individual. They look to deny people their rights to property, etc., and to protect their own. They even take oaths, and I've shown you the oaths that to do just that, to protect their own. Even at the seventh degree and higher, if it involves murder or treason. How can you base a judicial system, a legal system, with people like this? You can't. You absolutely can't. So, here you have a graph that shows that a child's brother or sister is within the first degree of consanguinity. I ask you, does it really matter if that individual considers another individual, right? Let's say the judge considers one of the lawyers or one of the parties their brother be through blood or because they took an oath to some organization? No, of course not, because they view them as their brother or sister. That's the first degree of consanguinity. First degree of relationship by affinity, not by blood, but by affinity. If anything, by affinity is even stronger, even more reason to disqualify somebody, because you can't determine, right? You can't pick who your brother and sister is, but you can sure pick your friends. And if you call your brother, your friends, brother and sister, well, there you go. It's a stronger bond than many brothers, people have with their blood brothers and blood sisters. So no matter what country you are, you need to get into this. You need to find out, what the rules are, what level is prohibited. And I'll bet you dollars to cumballs in every single country, every single legal system out there, they prohibit a brother or a sister of a judge, of a prosecutor, of a juror from sitting in on a case in which they have a brother or sister with it that's interested in the outcome of that case. Guaranteed. And if that's the case, then you need to start asking questions about who's in the secret handshake club. Now, how to fight the system. Number one, you have to avoid participating to the extent possible with the system. And I cite Q for this, right? If they send you a ticket in the mail because a camera took a picture of your car going through a stoplight, you just throw it away because they have to prove it was you. How do you know your car wasn't stolen by a couple kids that wanted to go joyriding for a few hours and brought it back before you woke up? You don't know that. They could have jump-started it. They could have snuck into your house, got an extra set of keys. Maybe their set of keys works for yours, right? It's not common, but it happens. It actually happened to a friend of mine. I was with him. He pushed a button. The car opened up. We got in. It was like the seats were different. Things weren't where they were supposed to be. We're like, what's going on? And finally, he jumped out. He's like, this is not my car. He looked at the very next parking spot, and there's his car. He pushed a button, and both cars unlocked and locked. Every time he pushed a button. So it can happen. Not common, but it can. And how do you know it didn't happen with you? So I'm on board with what Q says. Throw that stuff away. Sometimes you don't have the choice. And it happened to me personally. And also happened to a caller that called into one of Q's shows. She basically explained how she was kidnapped, not by a government employee, but by a government agent, right? They were contracted slash hired by the local government to go and get the caller and drag her into court to do some type of, legal action. I think it might have been a foreclosure. So sometimes you don't have a choice. And if when you don't, I'm going to tell you what to do. And then finally, if you're stopped by the police while driving, you need to take the initiative in questioning. And I'll explain that to you in a minute as well. So, slide 24. The presumption of regularity. The presumption of regularity is basically the law has many presumptions in it, right? Otherwise, it can't operate. Everything, you'd have to prove everything from the beginning. And if you go into your state's legal text, as well as the federal government, you'll be able to find a list of all the different presumptions that courts take in every single given case. One of them is the presumption of regularity, and that is that the law presumes that everything is as it should be. The judge, the court personnel, the court-appointed experts and individuals, like the attorneys for the children or forensic examiner, forensic accountant, the prosecutor, the police, the witnesses, the jurors, all of them. It presumes that they are all honest and do not have conflicting loyalties with the U.S. Constitution and even the state constitution, right? That's the presumption. Well, you need to rebut that presumption the first chance you get. So typically they'll call your case, you know, Mr. Smith, come up, you go up there and you say, you know, please, you know, state your name and address for the record. You state, my name is Michael Dean. I am here to rebut the presumption of regularity that this court currently enjoys. Boom. With that, you just pin the judge's ears to the wall because he's like, holy shit, this person knows what they're talking about. And then the next sentence out of your mouth should be, have you ever been affiliated with a secret society, club, or cabal to include without limitation Freemasonry and Order of the Eastern Star? Close quote. Boom. You just pin that judge's ears to the wall again with like six-inch nails. And if they're anything like my divorce judge was, they're going to be looking side to side, you know, for a window to jump out of. She couldn't believe I asked her that question. She didn't know what to do because she knew I was onto her after all the unbelievably ridiculous rulings that she had made. But I had to learn that on my own. Now, in this age of disclosure, and all the information that's out there on the internet, including some of the investigative videos that I talked about, Out of Shadows, Fall of the Cabal, sequel to Fall of the Cabal, Joe M, and many others that are that you can find or used to be able to find under citizen journalists on forthepeople.space, as well as, you know, David Wilcox, David Icke, and many other accounts. Many of which, or several of which, I've talked about and posted in my prior shows. You can go and get the handouts for those. You have a good faith basis to ask this question. You don't have to go and do all your own research. You can if you want to, but if you find me to be credible, this is considered to be on, you know, I'm giving you information. That in and of itself is enough to ask this question. And if you believe that that's the case, that there is, you know, secret societies controlling the outcome of cases, influencing judges and people involved in various lawsuits, you have a good faith basis to ask this question. And not just ask the question, but demand an answer. And there's the rub, because you may not necessarily get the answer that you want. There are three possibilities that they can give you in answering your question. Slide 25. The first one is yes. Have you ever been affiliated with the secret society? And they respond yes. And if they do that, which I doubt you'll ever get, well, then you start asking more specific questions. Well, which ones? How long were you involved? Did you hold any positions of leadership? Did you take any oaths? If so, get copies of those oaths. What are the names and relationships of other members? Do you call each other brother and sister? What texts do you use to study or learn about this organization? Ask them to produce copies because you don't know if membership in that society would violate their oath to the U.S. Constitution. You don't know how involved that is. Maybe they're on a terrorist watch list that we don't know about, but the FBI does. So that's why you're entitled to get all that information, and then we'll hold off on what you're going to do with it, right? So yes is the first possibility. Very unlikely, though. Most likely, they're going to say no. And if they do, you take them at their word, right? That's all you can do, because you don't have, at least presuming you don't have, any other facts to support it. If they're wearing a Masonic ring, right, or a shirt that says, I got the back of my brother or sister with a Masonic emblem on it, well, then you can dig deeper and call them out on it. Well, if that's the case, and make your record. Well, you just said no. If that's the case, why are you wearing a ring on your right hand, third finger, index finger, whatever it is, with a Masonic symbol on it? Right? I asked, that a copy of that, a picture be taken of that and entered into the record. Make your record. Or you have a picture of them, like I found on the internet, of somebody with in full Masonic garb, standing with a bunch of other people in full Masonic garb in front of a banner that says, the Masonic Lodge number 123, whatever it is, with the Grand Poobah standing in front of it. Confront them with those pictures if you got them. Challenge them. But if you don't have that, then you have to take them at their word when they say no. And then finally, the third possibility is that they just refuse to answer the question. They'll probably try and gaslight you, and move on. And especially now that you're trying to call them out, they're going to become gunning for you. Well, no big deal, because you shouldn't have been there to begin with, right? You were dragged in to this. So, if they refuse to answer the question or are evasive, you need to ask the question three different times. Okay? This is like a standard in law. Evading once, maybe twice, is okay because you didn't understand. You didn't think they were serious. There's wiggle room. But when someone asks the same question three times and they are not given a specific answer to that question, that holds weight. So if they refuse to answer, make sure you ask the same exact question, the same exact way, all three times. And don't let them cut you off because they're going to try and prevent you from doing that. You insist on your right to make the record. And then you order a copy of the transcript from the court reporter, get an actual electronic copy if possible. You need to figure out what the steps are to certify the transcript. Do that, and then you send that transcript with a cover letter to the local FBI office and explain to them why you're sending to them. And that's explained on slide 26. Okay? And then if you're pulled over while driving, take the initiative on asking questions. Why did you pull me over? The vehicle and traffic law only applies to commercial vehicles. Why do you believe I am engaging in commerce? I'm exercising my federal constitutionally protected right to travel. Show him or her the DOT card. It's on the next slide. Never say that you understand to somebody in government. Never, because what that means is that you stand under their authority. And then always say, I comprehend the words that you use, but refuse to stand under your authority. If they try and say that you're incompetent, that you don't understand, no. I comprehend the words that you use, but I refuse to stand under your authority. And the DOT card that I referred to, the U.S. Department of Transportation publishes a card, right? I'll call it a card. And on one side, it has the vehicle configuration of standard commercial vehicles. And on the other side, it has the cargo body type. If the vehicle that you're driving does not look like one of the vehicles inside on that placards, then they do not have a good faith basis to believe that you are engaged in commerce, which means that you have every right to question them on why they believe that you're participating in commerce, which gives them the authority to give you speeding tickets, etc. And then once you do that, make sure that you request a copy of that video, right? Because everybody wears body cams now. Get a copy of that body cam and use it as your evidence and send that to the FBI as well, telling them that they're violating your federal constitutional right to travel. And that, folks, is how you fight the system. And it may not seem like much, but I assure you, it's a lot, and it will work for you. At least I believe from personal experience and 20 years of practicing law in New York State at the federal, state, and local levels, it's the best thing that you can do to help yourself. Don't be afraid to establish your records, right? Create your records, enter the documents that you want. And that has to be the very first thing that you say when you get in there. Okay? You state your name, and the next thing is, I'm here to rebut the presumption of regularity that this court currently enjoys, as well as the prosecutor and name everybody else that's in that office or in that courtroom or administrative proceeding if it's one of those, right? If you're going for a license. So, with that, I wish you all the best. I send my love out to each and every one of you. Again, thank you, thank you, thank you to all my subscribers. I truly do appreciate everybody taking the time to listen to this show and supporting it. Thank you, folks, and thank you, BBS, for all the support. Thomas, please take it away.